He's already an Olympic gold medalist, having achieved the pinnacle of his sport at the tender age of 22 in London in 2012. But he's no longer the wide-eyed rookie. And at 31, John Smith is now looking to drag the next generation of South Africa's rowers across the finish line as they go in search of gold in Tokyo. I catch him at the National Rowing Squad's training base in Lesotho as he prepares to tuck into his second breakfast of the day at 11 o'clock in the morning.
We generally wake up earlier, have sort of a bowl of oats. Today we've run out of oats, we've had just some porridge. Off to the first session, which is generally either on the rowing machine or on the water. That takes sort of hour and a half to 2 hours, and then you got to replace. So then we back up second breakfast before, and then the middle session of the day, which is today's gym, and then we're gonna have lunch. And then we do a lot of eating. That's part of the game. You need to be putting in a lot of calories just to maintain the big loads. Something we enjoy, to eat a lot of food.
So this is obviously, would you say this is in competition training, and this is kind of how your day looks? And maybe let's go back a bit and start with, you know, what time do you get up in the morning and have that bowl of oats?
Things it varies now. Currently we're in Lesotho and the weather's really cold. We've got you sort of in the snow. So now we've pushed our training day a bit back. So we only train till 9 o'clock so we get the warmer weather. So on this camp we've been waking up sort of 8 o'clock, getting that bowl of oats in, and then on the water bath at 9. But through the summer season in South Africa, we're sort of waking up 6 o'clock, having that first meal on the way to the rowing dam. And then, the time shift changes, but the sort of four big meals a day, they don't go anywhere.
And what else besides oats are you eating to replenish and give you that energy to hit the water or the ergo or the gym session?
The morning meal is pretty standard. The first meal of the day, generally, I either a bowl of oats, or we have the Future Life, a cup of coffee, something basic, not overly massive. So you don't have too much troubles in the first session, but then once you get off that session, trying to look for something bigger, maybe more nutritious. Yeah, in Lesotho we're doing sort of the eggs and bacon, peanut butter toast with it. Guys, I'm one of the smaller guys. It's probably only having four slices of bread with some eggs and some bacon. The bigger guys are having six to eight. It's crazy. What the guys can consume, it blows my mind. Also, sometimes when we're in Pretoria, then we'll go to sort of a restaurant. So sometimes we go to Spur, get the breakfast. The guys are ordering two, three breakfasts. That Spur breakfast that has sort of two eggs, bacon, chips. They're ordering two of them and a milkshake. Guys can put it away. It's crazy. I'm sort of ordering sort of two of those breakfasts, maybe a milkshake or a cup of tea or something like that. But we all know what's decent to eat. We try to stay away from the junk, but we're less stressed. We try putting more good stuff than bad stuff. So we're not angels what we eat, but we try our best to try get in the good stuff when we can. And also obviously post training, protein shakes. We can't get the meal, but we prioritize food first over sort of protein shakes and all of those things. Protein shakes only for convenience. We can't get the meal sort of within that half an hour gap of training.
So, come on, who are those big eaters in the national rowing squad? You have to name and shame them.
Probably our biggest eater is Carl Scumby. He rows the four-man boat behind me. I've seen him do crazy things. This man, he puts it away. And then also, Jake Green has his moments. We can also have giant meals, Lawrence Britton. But Carl's definitely our number one of how much food someone can eat. His daily, he'll wake up and he'll eat something, and then second breakfast, a slice of toast with peanut butter and a bowl of Multibella. I don't know what world he lives in, but he's a machine, unbelievably strong. So I trust him what he needs to do. If he has to have eight slices of toast to produce what he has to produce, that's him, because he's also a lot bigger than me. He's a mummy. 92 kilo, I'm only an 80 kilo man, so we're not consuming the same.
Do you think that's something that perhaps the average sports fan or in South Africa doesn't realise is what goes into the whole rowing commitment? I mean, you've obviously, you've detailed the food and consumption that you need to have the energy, but that commitment to the rowing training and the long hours that you put in?
So the training commitment's big. It's We do a lot of sort of steady state miles. It's 7 days a week, with every first Sunday also. We're training day in, day out. We're 3 weeks off a year, and there's 3 weeks off in September, so I've actually haven't had a December holiday in sort of 12 years, 13 years since I've been training here. Every December, we take the rowing machine down, some weight plates, some bars, and we're training right through December, sort of twice a day most days. Christmas, we're training twice. New Year's, we're training twice. It's because that's the only way to get results. Everyone in the world that's at the top level is putting in these big hours, even through the December. So there's no getting around the work. You need to do the work to get the results. So yeah, and now as the season, early season, it's a lot of steady state miles, and then as we come closer to racing, it's just the coaches ramps up the intensity, and now they sort of there's a big work session every day. So it's not easy, but no sport is. It's just the nature of the sport that is sort of you have to put in huge hours to get the results.
It takes a special type of person then, John, I would say. I mean, you have to be, I would argue you have to be slightly moggy to go the rowing route and to put in those hours. Because I mean, it's one thing to have a physical commitment, but mentally as well, you've got to be a certain type of person, I would imagine.
Yeah, you gotta love the pain, and you gotta love the sport, and also gotta, I don't think you gotta have a few screws loose as well. If you speak about the day in, day out, it's just so relentless. You speak about the mind numbing miles that you gotta get through the work. But they also say, like, people in sport think we're always super motivated. I tell guys I quit at least twice a week when the program's ramped up. It's really not easy, but you just keep coming back for that taste of victory. We compete against each other sort of 2-3 times a week, and even to win there, that's just what we live for. I just live to keep winning, whether it be at home or overseas. To taste that glory, it's something sort of an addiction that we just keep chasing as a sportman.
So if you have to have a few screws loose, John, then give us some insight into the John Smith psyche then, because you know yourself better than anyone else. You know, what is it that you've got which screws are loose in your head that make you so committed to the sport all these years later? I mean, let's go back. I mean, you won, you know, lightweight coxless gold in London 9 years ago, and here you are 31 still doing it. So what's going on in that head of yours?
My biggest thing is that I have to be the hardest working athlete that is on the team or in the world. I just all the time just pushing the boundaries. If it is a lot of time when we're training by ourselves, or I just try to keep pushing maybe a little bit further than everyone else. So I'm not currently I'm doing the heavyweight category, so I'm probably probably the smallest competitor on the start line, sort of 80 kilos. A lot of the guys are 90 to 100 kilos, so a lot taller than me. So my big thing is I'm not the strongest. I have to outwork them. I have to train better than them. I'm pushing. If I can do a little bit extra here, like when we speak about champions, do extra, I have to keep pushing myself in the holidays when I know that maybe everyone's just doing the bare minimum to get through the holidays, I'm pushing. I'm saying, how much can I do? Can I push the limits? Just to keep myself in the shot. And I've sort of been nurtured like that from a young age, going with sort of Matthew Britton, Cizwe, Nat Forde. They taught me really how to train and how to push the body, sort of how to want more than anyone else, because in this game, the more you do, the better you're going to be. So you've got to have the work ethic, and you can't be well when you're sitting there doing, when you think you're done, and like, I've got to do 2 more Ks. I have to do this if I want to be the best. And then coming back the next day and just having to do the grind. You can't be all right in the head, I think, to put these hours in. And also Christmas Day, everyone's having Christmas lunch, and you back of your head, I'm going to come in the afternoon, and I have to push the miles, otherwise I can't be number one. And it's, even if you miss that session, we speak about, it's not going to change, it's not going to make the difference between winning the gold and losing the gold, but it's going to change the mindset of, am I the hardest working athlete in the world? And that's the way I like to approach training. I have to be on the limit all the time. And we speak also, people think sort of elite athletes are very consistent. I'm not a consistent athlete. I'm pushing the limits every day. And yeah, every now and again, I come unglued and I go home and I speak to my wife and I'm like, Nadine, that's like, I can't do this anymore. This thing is, I'm dead. I don't know how I'm going to come back. And he just tells me, don't worry, you've got this. Just rest, come back tomorrow. We just keep going. No one will outwork you.
John, I want to go back right to the start and start with, right at the start, with a question that, how does a boy from Germiston end up in the rowing space? Because I didn't think that Germiston perhaps was a rowing hotbed of talent. Is that right?
So I was born in Germiston, but then lived in Brackman most of my life. And then what happened is my brothers went to Boxwood High, and we were big into sort of the athletics, and my brothers played a lot of rugby. And then when it was my turn to go to high school, my dad is like, he's not sending me to Boxwood High. He's going to send his youngest and favourite son to boarding Pretoria. So I got shipped off to Sawmills College in Pretoria. And I was sort of a good middle distance runner. Enjoyed the cross country at primary school and at the athletics. And when I got to St Albans, those were not major sports. So the athletic season was 3 weeks and there was no cross country. And I tried my hand at water polo. It was not the best sort of B team. And then eventually I got injured in the water polo pool. And they said, okay, you're going to pick a new sport. So then after the rowing coach found me, and he said, like, the rowing will really help your fitness and give you a good shot at sort of the athletic season. That's really going to help. It's going to make you fit and make you strong. Come up to the sort of his house. He had the rowing machine there. He's like, jump on now. Let me see what you got. Jumped on, and he's just like, you're a natural. he was just trying to get me into the sport, get the numbers up. But yeah, that's where it started, on a rowing machine in the coach's house. He convinced me, and he just told me the sport is, the harder you work, the better you're going to get, and it's a lot of endurance work. And I thought, this is me. I've done middle distance my whole life. I know how to work hard. I enjoy doing the long stuff, and just went from strength to strength. All of a sudden, in sort of the A-team rowing, pushing out really good results. And I was like, this is my sport. And then never looked back.
I've seen it written that that's an element of rowing that appeals to you, is the hard training. I mean, it's obviously not something everyone can relate to, but you like that physical challenge and endurance every time you sit down, I would imagine, in a boat.
Some people hate that, going for a run, sitting on the rowing machine for 2 hours. It doesn't appeal to anyone. That's no one knows the joy of the pain that you go through. To go through that suffering, to push your body to the limit, is the ultimate for us. And, very very few people know how to push the body to its extreme to see what you actually got, and that's what we live for. That's what we live with. That no one knows sort of that pressure and that pain that what you can actually go through and to live right on the edge. It's what we chase. We chase most days, and that high that you get off that endorphin high is just something we chase every day. And I think a few people really know what that feels like, because they're never able to push their body to that extent. Or never want to as well. It's not pleasant in the moment, but to look what you can do is incredible.
You guys can't be that easy to live with. I'd imagine it takes quite a supportive partner then to try and understand that psyche you've touched on now, and relate to it and provide that support that you need.
Yeah, for sure. Luckily, Nadine, my wife, she was sort of SA water polo, and then transitioned into rowing. She was at the London Olympics with me. Obviously, we weren't going out then, only after the Olympics. But yeah, she understands 100%, and she knows, she's been through it. She knows how to support me now. It's been crazy. The Olympic year, you sort of hope for 3 weeks out of, I don't know, 16 weeks of the year. So I've been on, went on a 3 week camp, came home for 5 days. We're on another 3 week camp. We're going home for 5 days. We're away for 5 weeks till the end of the Olympic Games to sort of live alone by yourself. It's not easy on the spouse. Sort of also, it's not easy on you. You're so used to that relationship. So it's, being a professional athlete, yes, you get to travel the world, but it's not easy, because you miss the creature comforts of home, especially sort of here in Lesotho. It's very, I would say, basic. There's not a lot of luxury out here. There's no shops. You can buy some coke and some biscuits. So yeah, it's just geared straight for eat, sleep, and train. So yeah, it's everyone thinks it's a very glamorous life. It's not a very glamorous life. It's hard work. Even when we're off to Europe, you think you do a lot of sightseeing. We don't. We train. You go back to the hotel. You rest. You wait for the next session. Eat to recover. And if you don't see whatever you need to see on the way to the course, that's all the sightseeing you get. So it's, but you get to run some of the top courses in the world, some of the most magical places I've seen. I filled up the passport and went to my second one, and I've seen things that I'd never see without having the luxury of rowing.
What about away from rowing, John? I mean, there's no doubt that it's an all-consuming sport, and particularly at your level, it's incredibly all-consuming. But there's got to be some downtime, whether it's during competition or back home. And what are some of the things you like to do to get away from rowing?
We try to get our mind off the rowing when we're not rowing. It can be all-consuming, but it's also good to switch off. Actually, during the lockdown, during the COVID, I went to go stay with my parents again. They have a sort of nice big property, and I got to stay with them, because obviously you don't get a lot of family time with the rain, and to move in there during lockdown, we just riding every night, having a nice bonfire. Just got to spend so much time with my folks that I had missed over the last sort of the 12 years. So a blessing in disguise, the COVID lockdown was actually really incredible, just to spend that time that I'd missed over the last 12 years, because you away so much and you only get to sort of see them once a week for a few hours, to then spend all that quality time at home, sharing those memories. Eventually got out, went sort of fishing with my dad, did a bit of bass fishing. Also we try to look to play a bit of golf here and there. It's very cool. I'm not my dad, we play golf sort of with my mates and my brother and stuff, but yeah, it's very, this is what I do my off time, just relax, chill with mates. Nothing too strenuous. Like golf and fishing, those are good things. You don't want to go for a run with your friends. That's not what we're looking for. It's also on a side note, when I explain the training to people, I tell them the easiest session of the week is on a Friday afternoon. We have a 10K run, which is done sort of 5 minutes to 5.5 minutes recovery run. That's what we call it. So I say that the road train is quite tough. To put it in perspective, I told them the easiest session of the week is the 10K run done at sort of just over 5 minute pace to recover the legs for the next day's hard work. So that puts it in perspective. That's what we look forward to, the recovery run.
I want to go back to 2012, John. I mean, there's a limited amount of people in the world who can relate to that feeling of the very moment when you know you've crossed the finish line or hit a certain goal that means that you are going to be an Olympic gold medal winner. And in that moment, can you recall 9 years ago what that felt like as you crossed the finish line to know that you're an Olympic gold medalist?
Yeah, sort of pure elation. I remember coming into the final sprint, right? Matt right behind me, the last few strokes, he's shouting, yes, yes, yes. The crowd's so massive, I can barely hear him, and I think we've got this thing. We're going to win this thing. As we cross the line, I'm cheering. I don't realize he's saying yes, like we're going well, not like we're winning. And then when I watched afterwards, I'm like, I can't believe how close it was. But as we cross the line, just pure elation, cheering, slapping the water. But I was very young. I was just 22 years old back then, and I didn't quite realize what we had done. I was like, we just had an epic race. We won this thing. I'm super G'd up. But you don't realize, I was really quite young and naive. Now, when I look back now, I've reached the pinnacle. I've done what everyone has dreamed of, like many people have dreamed of it. To look back and actually have done it, I can't believe we did it, and it's incredible. And I'm still here chasing that again. I want it one last time, and Rio didn't quite happen, but that's why we are. That's why we are day after day killing ourselves, just to get that in the end, that pure elation of just all the dreams come true. This is what we're chasing, the Holy Grail.
With that perspective in mind, having gone through that, like you said, as a 22-year-old youngster, and here you are 9 years later, you're 31, going to Tokyo, how does that change your perspective or your experience going into trying to achieve exactly what you did with a different crew, but 9 years later?
No, the big thing is that, when I was young like that, everything was so new and different, and everything was such a cool experience. Never knowing what's around the next corner. But now, after being in the game for so long, we know what the work is, we know what we have to do. It's become more of like, you know what to expect. Nothing is new and surprising anymore. Now you know, it's almost like you're more invested now, like I'm sacrificing a lot more for the goal. So when I was young, I was just in this crew, and I don't know what is happening. Like these four amazing rows around me, and we're chasing this dream, and we get it now. I know what the road is. I know how much work needs to go in, and everyone's getting better, and I have to lift that game. And I have to. So now it's more, and I'm also, you put your life on hold to go after this. So everything I'm sacrificing more and more, and it becomes harder because it's not young and naive, and it's this is life. This is what you want, this is what you've got to go after, and you realize what you have to sacrifice to get to the top, and that's the difference, is that I know exactly what it's going to have to take. I've known the last 8 years what it's going to have to take, so I went through the last cycle and I did everything I could do, and we got fourth place, and it burns me that I did everything I could and I just didn't get results. That's how sport works.
Lastly, John, very simply, can you, John Smith, Lawrence Britton, Carl Schoenby, and Sandro Torrente win gold in Tokyo?
You best believe it. We're starting to get the belief. And although we're quite far, the last race, the British beat us by quite the margin, that doesn't scare me. And we've got to race another really good crew of Australians. The USA are unknown, but I'm not worried about them. I have a lot of belief in our crew. We have Sandro, who's come on. He's a sort of a prodigy. He's also young, like I was, young and super talented. We've got Carl. He's an outlier on the performance of what he can produce. So belief in the team is, well, we have no one else in that boat coming into the final sprint. So I do believe that this thing is on. A lot sort of chasing. Can we win? Put us in the mix and let's see what we can do. That's just give me a sniff. Let's see what we can do. I'm not more worried about that than the end result. Let us fight. That's what we want to do.
Yowzers, would you bet against him and his crew winning gold in Tokyo? Not me. He might like to bass fish, bry, and hit the odd golf ball, but pushing his body to the limit is clearly what gets John Smith going. Bet on him leaving it all on the water in Japan.